I'm Jethro, and my co-author Chris Thompson is hiding in the audience somewhere. All right, so what do you do when you get a new phone? Hack it, obviously, especially if it boasts some cool feature that says you can make and receive calls even when you don't have a signal over the internet. So I wanted to know how that worked, and well, from that followed some other stuff, and it's completely broken. Well, partly. All right, so that was the introduction. Next up is the background. Need to tell a little bit about what the protocols involved, and then I will move on to what's broken in those protocols, what kind of attacks you can do. I will also propose some solutions, and then we'll summarize at the end. Okay, so there are two protocols, or like they're pretty big. 2,000 page range is appropriate, just like the last talk. First is authentication and key agreement, which is part of the 3G protocol, and the other one is IMS or IP multimedia subsystem. Okay, so authentication and key agreement is the way your phone and the phone network exchange keys and authenticate to each other when you're first connecting to the network. This is part of the 3G partnership project technical specification, and this turns actually out to not be broken. Yes. So this is the phone authenticating to the base station. It sends an identity. The base station sends back a random number, sequence number, and a MAC over that data. The phone does some computation on that and sends back a MAC with a different key over the random number. At this point, the phone is authenticated to the network, and both sides also use the random number to derive two session keys using another MAC with other keys again. So the confidentiality key and the integrity key, and those are used later in the protocol to encrypt the voice data. So for the rest of the talk, I will just call this challenge and response, because the details in there don't really matter for the talk. So that's AKA. The other protocol is IP multimedia subsystem, or IMS. And this is basically used to make calls over the internet. So basically, you take the like the original phone protocols, and you strip out everything from the transport layer down and replace it with the internet. So this is based on standard internet protocols such as SIP and TLS, and digest authentication as it is used in HTTP. So a quick reminder about digest authentication. It was meant to not send passwords in the clear when you're using an otherwise unencrypted connection. So it has a simple challenge response protocol as well. First, the server sends the client a nonce, and then the client sends back username and some hash of the username, the password, and the nonce. So in IMS, they overloaded this digest authentication to do the AKA like key exchange authentication. So in this, here we have the phone talking to a SIP server through the internet. In this case, it's connected via Wi-Fi. That's probably the most common way a phone would be connected to the internet if it's not over the cell network. So it sends the SIP server its identity, and the SIP server sends, instead of the nonce that would normally be sent in the digest protocol, it sends the AKA challenge, and then the phone responds with the AKA response as the, instead of the password that would be used. Okay. So let's move on to what's broken here. Here's the entire system again, but We leave out this bubble in the middle, and on the left side we have the phone, and on the right side we have the phone network, which could either be like a SIP server for IMS or the home network, as in regular cellular communication. And there is some channel between the phone and the network. It doesn't really matter what, and we like to do this protocol to authenticate to the network and set up the secure channel with the session keys. Unfortunately, it's not that simple. So this is the same picture again, but with the blob filled in. So there are two different methods by which the phone can connect. Like the first one is over the regular phone network, and the other one is over the internet. And the protocol is not entirely the same. So the phone somehow receives a challenge from the network at some point, and it sends it to the SIM card, and the SIM card does all the computation and comes back with the response and the session keys. So that is the same for both IMS version and the cellular version. So the SIM card receives the challenge and sends back to internally in the phone the response and the session keys. Then on the cell network, the response gets sent over the network, and the session keys are then later used to encrypt like any ongoing communications. But in the SIP version, or the IMS version, the response is used as a password in this digest authentication thing, and the session keys, they're not used. So that might be broken. In fact, the RFC that specifies AKA digest authentication says this: this document does not specify the use of these additional keys. They may be used for additional security with some undefined security mechanism. So I'm wondering what they mean by additional security, because if you don't use the session keys, you don't get any security. What if instead you make the security dependent on something else besides the session keys? So this is the app that was actually on my phone that I tried to hack, T-Mobile Wi-Fi Calling, which lets you make and receive calls if you don't have cell reception. So they, in fact, use TLS to secure the channel. But the certificate they used is has a root certificate that is not like in your standard stores, and this root certificate is also not included in their app. So how could they possibly verify that it is, in fact, the right certificate? They don't, and you can do a man-in-the-middle attack. Fortunately, it turns out Android apps, this is a common problem. They don't check root CAs. All right. So even if you use TLS, it might still break. So here's an attack that actually shows why you need the session keys to actually secure the channel. On the left, we have the phone. It talks to a base station, but this base station is actually malicious. It is a false base station, has been set up by this man in the middle, M. And so the false base station and M are connected. They're the same entity. And M also has an internet connection that is able to talk to the SIP server. So let's review how a normal, or how the authentication and key agreements would work in this case. The phone would send its identity to the base station, and the attacker relays this to the SIP server. The SIP server sends back the challenge in the form of the overloaded in the digest nonce, and then the attacker just relays it back to the phone, and then the phone does some computation, sends back the response. Man in the middle uses this response in the hash as the password, and the man in the middle is now authenticated to the server. The phone has these session keys generated, but they're not actually used or needed in this protocol, for the man in the middle at least. So the man in the middle is now authenticated to the network and can make and receive calls as if it were the phone. All right, so let's go back to how the SIM card actually generates like the session keys and the responses. There obviously has to be some API in the system that takes as input a challenge and gives as output a response and those session keys. So that is exactly what the request iSIM authentication API does in which exists in Android 4 and higher. It takes in the challenge and gives back the response and the session keys. What if some malware could access that API? Here we have a phone with malware installed that accesses this API. The phone is connected to the internet. Here we show again it's connected via Wi-Fi, but in this case it could also be connected through like 3 or 4G, as long as it has any internet connection and the malware can talk to this server C over the internet, it would be fine. This server C also has another connection to the SIP server again. So let's replay the AKA protocol again. The phone sends an identity, or in this case the malware sends an identity to the attacker. The attacker forwards this to the SIP server, and then the SIP server sends back a challenge. The challenge gets back relayed to the malware. The malware accesses the API and inputs and gets back the response and forwards it over the internet to the attacker, which then uses this in the SIP session to authenticate to the server. And now it can do the same thing as in the false base station attack. And then there's another version of this attack, because you might notice that the session keys here are still not used. So in this case, the attacker does not talk to the phone network over the internet using IMS, but it actually talks to the phone network like as a regular phone, which is like has connected to like its computer or something. So there's a phone that talks to the attacker over the internet, again, could be over Wi-Fi or 3G, 4G, and then the attacker connects to the phone, which talks to a base station of a phone network, and that is connected to that provider's network. So here's the protocol again. I know you've seen this about 4 times now, but it's in the details. So the phone sends the identity to the attacker. Attacker forwards it to the network, gets back a challenge over the air. Sends it back to the malware. The malware inputs this into the API. API sends back the response and the session keys. And now the attacker has all it needs to set up a real channel for the cell network to work, because it has the response and it has the session keys needed for the security of the channel afterwards. Okay, so this API, who has access to that? Well, everyone with the read phone state permission. Read phone state and identity. An application with this permission can determine the phone number and serial number of the phone, whether a call is active, the number that the call is connected to, and the like. Do you think that "and the like" should include authenticating as this phone to a phone network? Probably not. And it turns out about 1/3 of all apps request this permission, so it might be very easy for like some malicious app to include this permission in their permission list, and anyone will just click through it. All right, so what's the impact of these attacks? So we have the classic man-in-the-middle attack. All the T-Mobile, or some T-Mobile customers with Wi-Fi calling enabled, were vulnerable to this attack before the update that they shipped in March. The fake base station attack, in principle, 3G and IMS providers that use AKA V1 for authentication are vulnerable. The malware attack, the same providers provided that they have customers that use Android 4.0 or higher, and the imposter attack works for customers of 3G providers with Android 4.0. Note that here you don't need to run any IMS service because, as you can see, the attacker actually connects to the provider over the regular phone network. All right, so how do you solve these problems? Well, for T-Mobile Wi-Fi calling, the fix was pretty simple. They should just include their root certificate in the app so they can do a proper certificate chain validation. We reported the problems in December 2012, and they fixed it 3 months later using an over-the-air update, and they claim that everyone is now protected. We looked at the fix, and it looks okay. More details on this attack are in our tech report, which is not the same as the paper. Digest AKAV1. Well, the RFC says additional security might be provided, but like I said, there is no security if you don't use the session keys, so they really must be used. So if you want to use TLS or something to secure your connection, you could potentially renegotiate the TLS parameters using a pre-shared key after you've done the key exchange. Also, there's an updated version of the AKA Digest RFC, which does use the session keys, but IMS does actually not specify to use the updated version. It uses the older version that is vulnerable. But if you use Digest AKAV2 and TLS, which is secured in a good way, like with full search chain validation and things like that, that should suffice. But this does not protect against the malware attacks. So for the API, it should just not be accessible, or at least require appropriate permissions. Like, there's a group of permissions that's called services that cost you money. That's probably more appropriate than read phone state. We reported this to Google in June 2013. We don't know what they did with that information. All right, so to summarize, we presented four attacks on cell phone authentication. Three of them were really classified as implementation issues, and one of them is the cross-protocol issue. And we also defined clear and actionable solutions for all of these attacks. All right, thank you. Any questions?
I had a question just about the TLS fix. Did they include a root CA, or did they include a more specific cert or a cert pinning solution?
No, they included their own root certificate. So here's like the entire cert chain, and they have like their T-Mobile incorporated root CA, which is now included in the app.
I was trying to look this up in the last 5 minutes, but I couldn't find it. But I believe the read phone state permission is now required for some subset of Android apps. I think if you're targeting a certain SDK version, that permission is included in all applications now. So it's
You just get it for free?
Yeah, much worse than just one third. I think they changed something in the platform that makes that a required permission.
Okay. Well, nice. Other questions? Okay.